Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, sitting in for Colin Cowherd. What a show we have for you today. Sam Amick, NBA insider from The Athletic, will join us 30 minutes away. Recap last night's two upsets last night. Get you ready for tonight. There is a game 7 tonight. And a huge game in the second round that's played before game 7 of the first round. Confusing? That's my raggy. That's my Scooby-Doo. Yes. Toronto, Boston. Remember, Boston beat Toronto. You don't want to go in down 2-0 into Boston. Well, you know what I mean. Anyway, Sam Amick will join us in 30 minutes. Apparently, the president has reached out to the Big Ten, which is diabolical and brilliant all at once. We'll get to that in the show. And I will tell you, there's a new book out, and I spoke with Uncle Colin last night, where Colin was right. Russell Westbrook. Victory lap. That's actually why Colin's off this week. He's taking a Russell Westbrook victory lap because of what happened last night. He had that much foresight. He's going to be exhausted coming back on Labor Day because of the victory lap. Anyway, I spoke with Uncle Colin last night. He's like, have you read this new book on the Patriot Dynasty? I was like, nah, man. Like, I got it like that, but I ain't got it like that. He's like, I'm reading it. It's fascinating. And we started talking about it a little bit, and in 1 hour, I will explain why Belichick and Trump are actually one and the same. And no, I'm not talking about them being orange or the hair or any of that. I actually think you'll appreciate both of them for this one word, consistency. Consistency. All right, that's in 1 hour. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. What happened last night in the bubble? Like, there are some amazing things that can happen when there's trades in the NBA. When you trade Chris Paul, a first ballot Hall of Fame point guard who has been at the center of numerous stories. Like, Chris Paul's actually lived several different interesting lives, right? Like, for the college basketball fan, he played for the late, great Skip Prosser. Rest in peace to Skip. Lost in an unbelievable game in the second round to West Virginia. Remember that? Kevin Pitsnoggle? He got pitsnoggled in the tournament. Then Chris Paul was playing for the New Orleans Hornets, and they had Hurricane Katrina, and so then they moved to Oklahoma City for 2 years. Do you guys remember any of this? Then he was supposed to be traded to the L.A. Lakers, that's because at the time the league was operating and owning the then New Orleans Hornets, and David Stern's like, nah, that ain't a fair trade. We ain't doing that. He was this close to playing with Kobe Bryant. How would we look at Chris Paul had he played with the Lakers back in his actual prime? Then he went to the Clippers, and they had that kind of dysfunctional mess of a Lob City, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin. Remember, they had J.J. Redick, Donald Sterling. Like, all of this stuff was going on. You had Donald Sterling getting exposed for who he really was or is. You also had the injuries in the playoffs, the dysfunction in the playoffs. Never made it past the second round. It was seen as the Clipper curse. The Clipper curse actually wasn't about that. It was about first-round picks getting hurt or just being a bust. Anyway, then there was the DeAndre Jordan. Remember, DeAndre Jordan left to go sign with the Mavericks, and then they went and got him to change his mind. They, like, sat down, right? Do you remember all this stuff? This is all one guy. Then he gets traded to Houston, and they basically trade like everything in the kitchen sink except James Harden for Chris Paul. And it comes close to working. Only 1 year Chris Paul gets hurt. 1 year they miss 27 consecutive three-pointers. Then he gets traded to Oklahoma City, back to where he had played, for Russell Westbrook, who had won an MVP and is the first player since Oscar Robertson to average a triple-double. Did it three consecutive years. Remember, he had that massive deal with Houston. Part of it is he's the president of the NBAPA. Like, there's a lot of other stuff with Chris Paul. But because Chris Paul has never even been to an NBA Finals or won an NBA championship, he right now is on the list and likely to remain on the list of guys who were great players but not champions, right? And what it takes to be a champion is you got to be a winner. Ah, look, he had that squad he had that great squad with the Clippers. We so often forget that 1 year he got hurt, 1 year Blake Griffin got hurt. That the truth is, as much as I hold J.J. Redick in high regards and considering he's still playing, he's still getting buckets, he's still a viable NBA player, really hard for him to be your starting two guard and win an NBA championship. Right? Like, that's just the reality of it. The reality is, normally, the best player on the other team plays the position that he plays, and he's not a particularly good or effective defensive player at all, and he can be marginalized offensively at times just being a shooter. But I could make these explanations for why Chris Paul hasn't won a championship. I would also point out, if you go back to his days with the Hornets early on, Peja Stojakovic on his team, as well as a couple others, he was great in the playoffs then. He had great moments in the playoffs for the Clippers. He had some big moments in the playoffs for the Rockets. And last night, he absolutely took over the game. The juxtaposition of Russell Westbrook, who not only had seven turnovers, but, I mean, some of the turnovers, no one's even near the guy that he's passing to, and he throws it out of bounds. Shoots an air ball in a tie game. Doesn't get the ball to James Harden when they're down two and a chance to come down and win it. Whereas Chris Paul, seemingly in on every defensive play, every important rebound, making every big shot. Houston was up 98-92. They're up 3-2 in the series to an Oklahoma City team, which everyone thought was tanking at the start of the year. You got Lou Dort, who's Canadian. He one and done from Arizona State, can't shoot, but competes. Chris Paul was brought in on that team for two reasons. One, to train Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to be in a star point guard, and two, to ultimately become trade bait and move on at some point in the middle of the season. Chris Paul hit two threes, grabbed two steals, hit two free throws, had two big rebounds. Oklahoma City ends game six on a 12-2 run. They force game seven. And Russell Westbrook is, when I say the GOAT, it's not the greatest of all time. It's the actual meaning usually of GOAT in sports, which is he's the one who screwed it up. It was amazing. And look, part of this is I was a point guard in college. I played professional basketball. I never made the NBA. But if I could play like one guy, if I envisioned how I would dream of playing ultimately in the NBA, right? Like, I grew up idolizing Stockton. I love Nash. But if I could play like one guy, Chris Paul's the guy. Chris Paul's the guy. And look, I know some of you don't like his persona, and we'll get to that later on in the show. I will tell you that when you're a 6-foot point guard, who's been told, you know, either you're not big enough or not good enough or you're not a winner, you, in order to make it, you almost have to be a mean SOB. You just do. But we do this thing in sports where we act like there's more pressure when you get to an NBA championship. Like, if you can overcome the challenges in the first and the second round, somehow you can't overcome those same challenges. Like, you're a choker when you get to a high. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. There's so many different things that go into winning. So, can we put to bed the idea that you have to win a championship in order to be a winner? You're going to miss shots in big instances. You're not always going to play perfect. But I would commit to you that Chris Paul, with the ball in his hands and the game on the line, I have a supreme amount of confidence that he's going to take and make the big shot or take and make the big play. I believe that last night he solidified himself, not just because he's done it once, he's done it multiple times in multiple stops for different teams and different coaches. He's a winner. He just may not go win a championship in Oklahoma City. Doesn't have a team do it. You can be a winner and not always win. You can be a losing player and sometimes win. Confusing? Sure. But sometimes that's our job, I believe, is not just to make bombastic statements and point out things that you may have missed, but also to give you context. And the context is they were dead to rights beaten with a young team, no real other options, and he just decided, F it, I'm going to win this by myself. And you know what? He did. What a game. What a night. If you love hoop, you were sitting there going, this is amazing. This is amazing. And it also points out, like, look, I respect stat guy. I'm not going to disrespect guys that follow the stats. But the idea that, like, Russell Westbrook, who averaged as many or more assists than Chris Paul, is in the stratosphere of Chris Paul as a passer is a joke. But that takes actually watching the games, understanding the nuance of the sport. And sometimes there are just too many things on, and we go and look at the box score and make an assessment as to who can do what and who can't do what. And we do the same thing about winners and losers. Well, you know, his team, Clippers never got out of the second round, so Chris Paul's not a winner. Like, you know, that's not really close to being accurate. Coming up next, I believe the Chiefs are a dynasty. Some have pointed out how hard a dynasty is to have. And I think one of the reasons that the Chiefs are a dynasty, that they're going to be around and give themselves several opportunities to win a Super Bowl, is because they're coached by a coach who has led a dynasty before. You just don't think of it as a dynasty. I'll get to that upcoming next, but first.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, I was reading this column by Ross Tucker, and, you know, for the record, Ross is a friend. I think he's a talented dude. He has his own show. He has a very good podcast. He's a former offensive lineman. He writes for The Athletic. But he wrote in The Athletic, a dynasty? And I don't know if he didn't write the headline yet. A dynasty? Question mark. The Chiefs won't even repeat as Super Bowl champions. Now, that's a bold statement made by a guy who played in the league and understands the league. And his point is, it's only happened three times in the last 30 years. Cowboys, 92-93. Broncos, 97-98. Patriots, 03-04. That also means it hasn't happened in 16 years. Becoming a dynasty is tougher than ever. He's right. And for the Chiefs, because of COVID, their top guard opted out. Damian Williams, really their best player in the Super Bowl until maybe the fourth quarter. Like, Pat Mahomes did not have a good game. Damian Williams, I thought, should have been the MVP, at least for the Chiefs. Nick Bosa was the best player in the game. They just didn't win, so we don't give him the MVP. But there's this thing that we do, okay? There's this thing we do where we say, well, look, it hasn't happened in 16 years. There is no dynasty. Now, there's a difference between being a dynasty and winning back-to-back. And I understand that you're like, well, Gottlieb, in order to have a dynasty, you got to win back-to-back championships. If that's what you feel like a dynasty is, if that's your definition of what a dynasty is, okay, it will be difficult. It will be difficult. But if you look at the literal meaning of it, okay, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, it's a powerful group or family that maintains its position for a considerable amount of time, or a succession of rulers in the same line of descent, right? Sports dynasties, you know, dynasty, and again, this is from Merriam-Webster. It's been used in the lexicon for over 600 years. It started with a ruling family, and in 1905, they started talking about baseball's dynasty. But the point is this. I don't think you have to win back-to-back titles in the NFL to have a dynasty, because I do believe that if we looked at the Patriots and they hadn't won back-to-back Super Bowls, you would say that 20 years of dominance is, in fact, a dynasty. It's a lot like the Spurs. They never won back-to-back. It's a little bit different in the NBA. But okay, man, like, look, they were set to return 20 out of 22 before two dudes opted out because of COVID. And with no preseason games, with limited practice time, it stands to reason that the teams who return the most talent from the previous year and aren't changing teams, aren't changing coordinators, aren't changing coaches, those are the teams that will be the most successful. The teams that are good last year, probably going to be good this year, especially if they kept their group together. More to the point, I would tell you that I believe Andy Reid has been the author of a dynasty previously. You may find it hard to believe. Okay? You may. But I look back, and if you remember, they lost three consecutive years in the NFC Championship game before ultimately getting to a Super Bowl. In that run from 2000 to 2004, that's five straight seasons, they won 11, 11, 12, 12, and 13 games. Four consecutive years they won the NFC East, which at the time was pretty good. Here's maybe the kicker. They did it with Don McNabb. Now, I don't know what your impression of McNabb is, and, you know, hasn't been great on Twitter. Ultimately, they traded him to the Redskins, which is kind of the ultimate signal that you're done. If we trade you in division, we're not scared of you one iota. And in truth, you know, they had the 1-6-10 year, and Andy Reid had his own personal issues with the family, with the boys off the football field. He had issues with, you know, Terrell Owens torpedoed that team after the Super Bowl. That's all part of it. He had double-digit win seasons. Right? Double-digit win season, which is the sign of a really, really good team. 8 out of 11 years. They went to the NFC Championship game 4 times. They won the NFC Championship game in a 5th time that they played in it and went all the way to the Super Bowl. And you know, McNabb was terrible in the Super Bowl. But the point is, to be that consistently good in the NFL, in many ways, the Eagles were, in fact, a dynasty. Because he did it with McNabb. He did it with Mike Vick. I mean, heck, that's really the truth. And look, and this is not me trying to disparage Mike Vick, but Mike Vick was straight out of jail. Like, people forget, he was super rusty. It took him a while to come around, and he maybe never lived up to how good he could have been because of his own failings early on in his career. The year they won 6 games, that was the year that Don McNabb got hurt. Do you remember who their starting quarterback was for 7 of those games? Have you ever heard of Mike McMahon? You ever heard of him? Neither have I. I forgot. I totally forgot who he was. So only injury to their starting quarterback kept them from continuing in their dominance. And their starting quarterback, McNabb, was good. He wasn't great. Now you have a team that returns almost their entire roster. The best quarterback in the league. Not yet even in his prime. Surrounded by arguably, it's an argument, we can have a discussion about it, arguably the best skill position players, not just in the league, but in a fit for what the quarterback can do. You got a great offensive head coach. You got a pretty an improving defense. A division in which, like, dude, Drew Lock has a chance to be the starter in Denver. We'll see. But you're going against Drew Lock, Tyrod Taylor, and no Derwin James, and Derek Carr. Like, they're going to win. They're going to lap the division. So I understand what Ross is saying. Ross Tucker's a smart dude. He knows football. This is not me impugning his use of his football knowledge or his use of stats. But everything has to do with context. And the context is this. Does anybody argue that Andy Reid, next to Bill Belichick, okay, is of the last 20 years, those are the two best coaches in the league? Anybody have an issue with that? Like, he was winning with Alex Smith, who's a good but not great quarterback. He was winning with Donovan McNabb, who's a good but not great quarterback. If you can get to the playoffs consistently with those two guys, now give the guy the best quarterback in the league and the best skill position players in the league and a crummy division and returning most of your players. And in a pandemic when you don't have off-season work, and so consistently bringing those guys all back puts you ahead of everybody else. I think Andy Reid's already authored a dynasty. It just didn't end in enough Super Bowls, and I think McNabb's a big reason because of it. His history, his knowledge of what it takes to be consistently good going around with those other factors, I disagree. I think the Chiefs are beginning a dynasty. And this is from a Charger fan. The Chiefs used to be the joke of the league from this standpoint. We all know how it ends. They get a home playoff game, and they find a way to get a first-half lead, and then they gag it away because usually quarterback play or conservative play calling. Last year, they got behind in all three playoff games because they had the best player in the league that came back and boat raced everybody. And he's in, what, his third year in the league? Come on, man. Chiefs aren't going anywhere from their perch atop the AFC West and from one of the dominant teams in the NFL. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
All right, Ryan, what do you got?
All right, Doug. I'm going to hit you with some college football news that you alluded to earlier. The president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, tweeted out about an hour ago, slightly over an hour ago, had a very productive conversation with Kevin Warren, commissioner of the Big Ten Conference, about immediately starting up Big Ten football would be good, great for everyone, players, fans, country, on the one-yard line. Our colleague here at Fox Sports Radio, Clay Travis, added this. He described the call between the president and Kevin Warren as lasting between 15 to 20 minutes. Was a productive conversation, in no way partisan. Both men, Trump and Warren, agreed that football shouldn't be partisan in any way. This call happened at the request of the White House in order to focus on necessary steps in order for Big Ten athletics, particularly football, to be on this field sooner rather than later. Warren told the president they were exhausting every measure possible to play. President Trump promised to make testing and federal resources available to enable a return of Big Ten football. Commissioner Warren now needs the Big Ten's Return to Competition Task Force to provide him with a list of resources and thresholds necessary for a return to play that he can then return to the White House.
Okay, listen, we're going to talk about Trump at the top of the hour, and I think this is an absolute brilliant move by the White House, okay? Brilliant move. And it's very simple. Trump is playing politics with sports, right? Because what I believe the administration wants you to believe is that the only reason they're not playing football is because of politics, right? Is there is this kind of conspiracy theory that COVID is simply about the election, not about people's health or their concerns. It's only about the election. And miraculously, after November 3rd, it'll all go away and it'll be business as usual. And he just happened to only call one conference. Notice he didn't call the Pac-12. Right, Pac-12's not playing. He didn't call to try and offer assistance there, right? What are the states that you have to win if you want to win the presidency? Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. States that he won last time around. Hey, what states are the Big Ten in? Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. It's brilliant. If they still don't play, Trump wins because he can say they're not playing because of politics, because they want to win the election. If they do play, he can say, see, I fixed it. It's brilliant, diabolical, but brilliant, because I actually believe that the Big Ten presidents, they don't want to get sued, and they don't want to have a kid drop dead because of myocarditis coming back from COVID. Now, are there some protections in place? Am I somebody who believes you're safer playing your sport, being in your sports bubble, which we've all been in when you play collegiate sports? Of course. But this is Trump brilliant. He is, like, the whole thing, I'm not a politician. I'm not running as a politician. Oh, this is a very savvy political move.
And next hour, I will give you an update on a potential for Earl Thomas in Dallas. Jerry Jones talking about it. We'll get to that next hour.
That's it? That's all you got? That's all we got time for. That's Rhyme Music with the News.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
And again, like, what happens is when you give somebody credit for adept political maneuver, you're like, wow, you're a MAGA guy. I am not a MAGA guy. Okay? But I love political science. I wish I knew more about it, but the things I do know, I observe and I watch and I comment on. That's what happened. He's using sports to help his reelection campaign. Kind of brilliant. And it's a no-lose for him. Absolute no-lose. All right, last night was amazing in the NBA. Two upsets. Lost in the Rockets' collapse at the end of the game and Oklahoma City forcing a game seven. Is the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks once again lost the opener in a playoff series. Jimmy Butler had 40. Let's get to Sam Amick, who, of course, covers the NBA as an insider for The Athletic. He joins us in The Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Let's start with the nightcap and work our way kind of in reverse a little bit. Is it more about Russell Westbrook's terrible play or Chris Paul's amazing play, the summation of that fourth quarter?
Man, Doug, that's a neck and neck race. I mean, I'll give it to Chris, not only for, that fourth quarter, but his continued, we had a headline at our site last week that said Chris Paul owns the bubble. And it's like, man, that continues to be true with the president of the players union side and everything that came with it. But the revenge factor in this series is incredible. If you would have told me last offseason that the Thunder, after making, getting Chris in that trade, would be in this kind of a spot, there's no way in hell I would believe you. So that's my pick. But, man, Russ struggling, but also James being passive was something that jumps out at you.
John Hollinger pointed out, of course, I know he also writes for The Athletic. He formerly used to work for the Grizzlies, and we worked together back at ESPN. He pointed out that he just looked tired. And whether he's a guy that fatigues easy or whether – and he's always been seen as a hangout guy, right? The only guy with a jersey hanging in a strip club. I know they can't go to strip clubs. But fatigue makes cowards of us all. I thought fatigue played a huge factor in why James Harden was so passive late in that game.
Yeah, I don't know what to attribute it to. But, and listen, for sure, James is known as a dude who has a good time. But out here – that ain't happening.
I know.
You know what I mean? It's just not. I wrote a story last night, and as a sports writer, it's still surreal. I've only been here for a few days now, and Rudy Gobert is 20 feet away hanging out, and there's nowhere to go. These guys are chilling. And so was it fatigue? Was it him just wanting to hand the reins to Russ for that moment? I don't know, but it's a terrible look. And again, the idea that Chris – they, like he said on the way out, he yelled. He said, we got a chance. That's all he wanted was a chance. And now that they're letting it come to this, is they're certainly playing with fire.
I have an appreciation for Chris Paul because I played the position, and I think he's awesome. But I've also seen him in his career. You go back to the New Orleans Hornets days when they made the playoffs, and I thought he was great in tough situations there with limited talent. Is it possible that Chris Paul can be a winner and not win a championship?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it is possible. I mean, he's had some bad games in those Warriors matchups when he had a really good opportunity and he couldn't figure it out alongside James Harden, you know, and then the Clippers days, you know, they didn't get it over the top. I mean, you know, it's the John Stocktons, Karl Malones, Charles Barkley's, all those kinds of guys. You can't sit here and tell me they're not winning championship players, but, you know, now there's nothing but a court full of NBA stars who have never tasted that champagne, you know, and that's where there's so much on the line in this series. Even if you go to the coaching side of things, Mike D'Antoni is on that short list of most celebrated NBA coaches who's never won one. And James and Russ have been fighting their own fight in that regard. But, you know, in terms of what he said postgame to Jared Greenberg on TNT and how, you know, some people are made for this, you know, I mean, he's got it, and now we'll see if he can do it one more time.
Yeah, it would be an amazing story, as you point out. Everybody thought they were tanking. He was just there to help Shai Gilgeous-Alexander learn the position, then be off on his way and be traded, and that never happened. How concerned?
You know,
go ahead.
Really quickly, to put a bow on that, you got to remember, I'll never forget last summer at the Players Awards event, talking to Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM, about how days before he traded Chris, they were in a hotel room building the Rockets roster together, and Chris was damn near a member of the front office unofficially. And they've gone from that to, you know, him being on the verge of taking them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's fascinating. How concerned are the Bucks?
I think very. The noise just got so loud all of a sudden, with good reason, and Giannis is now front and center. You know, you're seeing everything on social media, the criticism he's taken for not guarding Jimmy Butler late. You know, we know the narrative around Mike Budenholzer, fair or not, about playoff adjustments. And last year was such a disaster with the way they went out against Toronto. So I think it's real, and it's real largely and firstly because of the force that Jimmy and the Heat are bringing their way. I mean, they're so aggressive defensively, and they just, that wall they kept creating for Giannis, you know, he would try to get going on the runway and he had nowhere to go. So I think it's real.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Tonight, Celtics, who have a one-game-to-none lead, granted no home court advantage to go back to Boston Garden. But, I mean, like, look, this is a little bit of what we thought. Like, we're more surprised by Toronto and their regular season than I am, at least, than by Boston beating them in one game. Is it possible Boston's just better, at least made in terms of being made for the playoffs, because Jason Tatum is quickly becoming, going from really, really good prospect to star in this league?
Yeah, that's a huge factor, and we're still not talking enough about his defense. And, you know, they're similar to Miami when it comes to their guard play is just incredible, and the level of, you know, competitiveness they bring out every night is honestly really fun to watch from close up here in this unique bubble. And I think on the Raptors side, the Pascal Siakam struggles have just got to come to an end. But I don't know that they can when you're having to deal with people like Marcus Smart and what the Celtics bring defensively.
Have you ever seen the type of shot making? Like, tonight's game 7, and I know not a ton of people, but Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, like, these are not easy shots.
It's incredible.
But what's it actually like to watch? Because I'm just telling you, on home on TV, it looks like a video game with how these guys are shooting.
Doug, I hate to admit this, and I'm going to rectify this tonight, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of more shot making. I've had to rewire how I watch these games in person because no fans and the way it's all set up, I honestly think that, you know, you are feeling the emotion and you are connected when you're watching on TV. It's almost challenging in real time to really understand and appreciate what these dudes are doing on the floor because it feels like a summer league game.
Yeah,
which, you know, is weird, but nonetheless, I mean, for Jamal and Donovan, guys like that, to be able to play like this and to not, you know, have take it down a gear because of the environment is impressive, and I mean, this is historic stuff. We have not seen this before.
One of the negatives, I agree with the summer kind of summer league feel. Like, I understand the idea behind the jerseys and the sayings, but I think it makes it feel different. I think that takes away from, like, you're watching, like, well, those aren't regular NBA jerseys. The other part is, you know, Jamal was so good two nights ago, but he, and I almost feel like he speaks for the league in that I understand the protest and what you're playing for, and it feels it's bigger than basketball, but there's a certain like lack of joy, right? Like, you drop 50, you're 9 of 12 from three, you play as well, and it's, I almost feel like there's a mental health aspect to it, not just with the protest, but also with the bubble and the lack of fans and the, just the strange interactions. Like, I almost get the sense that this is not nearly as much fun as it should be.
I would agree with that 100% when it comes to, I mean, these guys, fans can roll their eyes if they want. These guys are struggling inside here. You go watch some of those videos of how they reacted when they saw their children for the first time in 7 weeks yesterday, because a couple of these guys finally got family in here. Even myself, Doug, being real with you, and I wrote about this the other day, I did not enjoy quarantine. I had a bit of an issue at the end of quarantine that added a day and was not happy about that. And then you get in here and all of your comforts are gone. And the rules are incredibly restrictive. It puts you in a weird headspace. And then you add in everything these guys are fighting for off the court. It's real. Maybe it does take some of the joy out of it, but I give them a ton of credit, not only for fighting things that are bigger than them, but for competing and for playing really good basketball that is fun to watch.
Last thing, felt like the biggest winner last night was LeBron James and the Lakers. Not that they don't match up well with the Rockets anyway, or the Thunder anyway, but it's just the idea of when you have a superstar in his mid-30s that at times has looked fatigued, and granted, you don't want to stay in the bubble any longer than you have to, but they're not going anywhere, to get a couple more days off after getting a couple days off because of the protest. I feel like the Lakers won last night.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I went to Lakers practice yesterday. It was actually my first practice since I've been here to just kind of go see how it works differently in this environment. LeBron's chilling on a chair, FaceTiming with his family, talking about, it sounds like they might have added a beach house to the LeBron estate, but having a lot of fun and in good spirits and having a huge smile on his face. And there was no tension in the room. Those guys actually seemed really loose, really happy, enjoying themselves. And meanwhile, you know, everybody around them is fighting for their playoff lives. I mean, there's no way that hurts.
Sam Amick, Reed is working The Athletic. He does a great job. Sam, thanks so much for taking time. I would say I can't wait to get out of the bubble, but you're down there for another month and a half, so do the best and enjoy.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, pleasure is all mine. An unfortunate trend for the Bucks and the defending MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Share that with you next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. I'm going to pay Bill Belichick and Donald Trump a bit of a compliment, even if it's a kind of backhanded one, top of the hour. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports NFL Insider, will join us next hour. We'll get his thoughts on my take. It kind of circles around the new book, which talks about the Patriots dynasty, which many think have ended with the departure of Tom Brady to Tampa. Tonight, the Milwaukee Bucks will take on the Boston Celtics, game two of the Eastern Conference second round of the playoffs. And it's fascinating that if you look at, honestly, look at Giannis's numbers, he's shooting the ball. If you look at the raw stats, he's shooting the ball better from three in these playoffs than he ever has, 38%, 58% from the field. But if you look back to last year and you look to kind of game one and you start to understand the struggles, there's a bit of a disturbing trend around Giannis. And I think there's a little LeBron to Giannis as well, which is when in the regular season, you can just get going downhill and play through contact and get to the rim. And when help double, triple team comes, kick off and shoot threes. And that's fine. When you get to the postseason, look, there are times in which Steph Curry, NBA Finals, usually first couple games of each of his NBA Finals, he struggled early on. And then later on in the series, he seems to have gotten it going. Why? Because the game's so much more physical. Like, if you don't think that the officiating has changed the NBA, I can't help you. I can't help you. It's the same thing in the NFL. Why are wide receivers more valuable than running backs? Well, because they've changed all the rules for wide receivers. They've changed none of the rules for, you know, inside the tackles, how it's blocked, or running backs, whatever. They can't protect the running backs, so they protect the wide receivers and the quarterbacks. Well, the same thing with the Bucks, really, in that here we are again, and Giannis, and you can build a wall. Why can you build a wall? Because you can be so much more physical with him. Same thing happens to James Harden, right? Regular season, he gets all the calls. He plays downhill. He drives in there. He flails his arms up in the air. Postseason's like, man, why am I not getting those calls? Different sport. Happens in the Super Bowl, they don't throw flags. Happens in the NBA playoffs, they don't call as many fouls. And it's hurting Giannis. It's a disturbing trend. We'll see if it continues. Bill Belichick and Donald Trump, same guy. I'll explain why next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.